둘, 셋, 파!
For Hey Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Hey, I'm Nancy Wilson.
Mike Campbell.
Mark Mothersbaugh from Devo.
Hey, it's Adam from County Crows, and I am here giving you the story behind the song.
The story behind the song is back for season four. I'm Peter Chidi of Deep Cuts Media, and this season we're diving even deeper into some of music history's most iconic tracks with the legends who made them.
What's so beautiful about it is a lot of people connect with, you gotta live your life and don't let the big man push you down. Don't have to live like a refugee, can't keep fighting for what you believe. And that was Tom.
From the spark of inspiration to untold tales from the studio, we unlock the true stories that shape the music you love.
At the time on the radio, there was a really cool riff by Nazareth covering a Joni Mitchell song, This Flight Tonight. It had the same groove, but I think Barracuda kind of blew it out of the water.
Join us as we all sit down with music icons like Devo, Heart, Mike Campbell of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Sublime, Counting Crows, and so many more. New episodes are out now from the Consequence Podcast Network, so tune in wherever you get your podcasts and join me for the story behind the song.
Are you ready for season three of Discography? Yeah! We're jumping into the deep end of The Who. Not only will we go through every Studio Who album in great detail, but their story is often told between albums, so we'll be touching on non-album singles, the solo works of Keith Moon, John Entwistle, Roger Daltrey, and Pete Townshend, and some of the events that would make a record begin as a concept and land as something that would universally change the world. Discography returns to Consequence Podcast Network in January of 2019. Until then, be lucky.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's an interview series presented by WFPK Independent Louisville at WFPK.org. Consequence of Sound and the Consequence Podcast Network. Wherever you're listening from right now, there's probably a subscribe button in front of you. Whether you're checking this out on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, Acasts, YouTube, or Spotify, go ahead and hit the subscribe or follow button wherever you're checking us out from, as we put out multiple interviews every single week. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest is Dave Kooning. You probably know him as the founding guitarist of The Killers. He's got his debut solo record out now called Prismism under his last name only, Kooning. And we're going to get the ins and outs of how this whole project came to be. Not only the roots of these songs and how far they go back into his career, but also the stories behind a few of the tracks and how a version of Shock Therapy helped with his creative output. We're also going to throw a little love to the Smashing Pumpkins and Queen. And of course, we're going to talk about The Killers as well. There's a whole lot to get into. He's got a great story to tell and a fantastic debut record. It's Kyle Meredith with Kooning.
It's Dave Kooning.
I should start out with congratulations on this first solo record, Prismism. It's been a really fun listen.
Thank you. Well, that's what I like to hear. Yeah. I've had to wait really patiently for it to finally come out. Had some of these songs a long time and some of them done longer than others. So, yeah, it's an exciting time for me at least.
And we'll get into the roots of this record, but since you've already mentioned that one little part there, does any one specific song win the longest gestation award?
That's a good question. It might be the last song, Hope and Safety. That was just something I was playing and around in a hotel room like 10 years ago, and I taped it as a voice memo and had to go searching deep to find that one, and just decided to work on it one day for this album and to turn it into something.
Well, that's sort of the roots of this record, though, right? I mean, these are songs, as you've mentioned, that you've been writing over time, and I don't know, are these songs originally written thinking, oh, we'll put these in the Killers catalog, and then, you know, whatever it doesn't take, and so here they are, or how does it shake out?
Well, while I was in the Killers, I certainly was hoping they would be used for the Killers, but I would just stockpile them anyway because you never know if I'll be. I didn't know if I was going to be making a solo album someday or writing for someone else. Then I would at least have all these ideas because I definitely will forget them if you don't record them on something. Because I forgot 90% of what I listened to. I was like, oh yeah, that little thing I played in soundcheck and this little thing I played in my hotel room. And so you got to keep track of it all somehow.
There's an obvious freedom to independence, you know, but I'd be curious, yeah, like what the challenges have been for you, if there have been challenges, I guess.
I mean, a little. In a band, you have to bounce, you have to compromise with other people and then hopefully settle on, you know, finished product that y'all like or like more or less. Maybe it's not the way you envisioned it, but the solo thing, the freedom is a great thing, but then you don't have anyone to bounce any ideas off of. Usually if you're just right there writing by yourself. So then you're kind of like, oh, this is great. At least I hope it's great. And then you got to show it to your friends and other people to get their take on it or whatever. But
at least I hope it's great.
Yeah, I mean, you start out, like, I know when I'm onto something good. But then later there's a little bit of doubt, like, is this as good as I thought it was? And then you got to show it to people.
Well, I mean, let's take the official first single, Boat Accident, because this is as good as any of any classic that you've ever been a part of. You know, I mean, this is a hell of a song. Like, I don't know, is that one of those moments where you thought, oh, I'm onto something here?
Yeah, that was a voice memo that it was just a, like 30 seconds of a chord change that was kind of a fun chord change. And I was like, I found it in my pile of voice memos and I was like, oh, that's kind of fun sounding. And I was about to throw it away again or go on to the next one. And I decided to work on it a little bit. And it's amazing how it transformed a little bit. You know, once I started adding bass and keyboard to it, it turned into a whole other thing. And I was excited right away once I dug deeper into it. I could tell it was something.
Now, unless I missed it, this is one of those songs where the title doesn't exactly lend itself to the lyrics.
Yeah, this is my first solo album, so one of the mistakes I made this time around was having a bunch of song titles that have nothing to do with the song. I think I'm going to try and change that next time around because then no one knows what I'm talking about. But yeah, I would often need a title for Pro Tools because I can't just have like a million songs called Idea Number 3.
Right.
So I would put in something, you know, either it was be watching the news and something would give me just a quick, okay, fine. That was the last thing I saw on the news was this. Some guy on San Diego who had to be rescued by the Coast Guard because he was on a yacht and it crashed.
And there's the song.
I was just like, okay, boat accident, Pro Tools. And then it doesn't really have any meaning to the rest of the song. But it does, like, there is sort of a metaphor there about being in over your head maybe or something. So I kind of sometimes am influenced a little bit by these temporary titles. And then they usually stay unless I can think of something better. And I didn't want to necessarily, like, just call the song title whatever the chorus was. But next time around, I'll think of something easier because this is just too confusing. Everyone's, you don't say prismism and prismism either. And then you don't say, you know, Queen's Finest and the Queen's Finest. So,
but
I guess
you've also
got
a band. I mean, you've got a band too. I'm certain, you know, when you take this out live, they had to learn those songs. And I'm guessing that was part of it. Like, which one is that?
Yeah, they know them now, but there was a little bit of that at first. So I guess some people will figure it out, or maybe, I don't know, maybe they can modify the search engines for major lyrics or whatever to work so people can find it.
It's not that difficult. So, I mean, I don't want to paint that too dark there. You know, it's just
sure.
Plenty of moments in history where this has worked out fine for the artist or the song. So.
Yeah, it's more fun because for me, because sometimes I look at bands, CDs and records because I'm still, you know, I still enjoy the physical and I'll be like, oh, sometimes it just looks cool seeing the cool track names.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, some of my, like I said, I didn't want to just call each song by whatever I was singing in the chorus because I just didn't think that would be as cool for me.
Do you find that you write with your own voice in mind or do you write with other people's voices in mind sometimes?
Good question. I try and write with my own voice in mind. But sometimes, I think because I'm a little newer to the singing part, sometimes when actually came time to sing it, it didn't match what I had in my head. Yeah. I'd be like, oh, I thought I could sing this a little different, but I don't sound like that. So then I would have to adjust the way I sing a little bit. And maybe I thought I could like scream over it better, but it just wasn't something I could pull off. So then I would have to approach it differently.
And I guess that, you know, that coming from, you know, having been in a band all this time, and usually, you know, that you're writing with someone that's someone else that's going to sing it, you know, one way or the other. So,
yeah, it was another learning process for me.
With that in mind, too, I've been reading, like, you've been mentioning the Smashing Pumpkins a whole lot, too. And I kind of wonder how big of an influence they might have had on this record.
Well, certainly a little bit, because they were an influence when I, many years ago, when I was learning guitar. So they were an influence on my playing long ago, and that stayed with me. And then they've sort of resurfaced with a new album, and which I think has some really good stuff on it. And, you know, I saw them live, and I got to play with them. So it seemed like I've been listening to them more recently again. And, yeah, it's fun for me to have a little more guitar freedom than I maybe would normally have. You know, I literally can do whatever I want. That's the one thing people are a little surprised. They thought the whole record was going to be like a heavy metal record or something. And I was like, well, no. But you know, I'll definitely have more guitar stuff. That's never going to change. I'm always going to have guitar-heavy songs down the road, just because I'm not going to like bend regarding to trends or anything like that. If you know, someone has to do it. So I still have a lot of that stuff that's always in me. But then I embraced the keyboard side of me too, because I love that stuff. So, and most people don't know that I can play keyboards before this record. So I enjoy both.
Well, I guess that's why, you know, the Pumpkins sort of stood out, because that's what I saw. I was like, oh yeah, there's a band who've got so many different sounds. And Corgan even went through his own synth phase, I believe. And I won't try to draw too direct of a parallel there, just kind of, you know, as I see it pop up and everything. Which, by the way, I'll echo you, that that new EP and Silvery Sometimes especially, I think is one of their best singles, like, in his career.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites that's came out in a long time. That's a really good song. But no, there is the parallel you speak of is true with them and probably a few other bands like Queen, where it's like okay to not stick to one thing. It's okay to be different every song. Mm-hmm. That's what I set out to do, to not really think too much about it. Like, oh, this song I wrote on acoustic, so I'll start with that. This song I wrote on keyboard, so I'll start with that, and so forth. That's probably how I'll be going forward.
I'll hit to the other side, and probably, you know, a bit of the gorilla in every interview room that you're in right now, because usually listeners tend to think of songs about the artist's love life or something like that. But, this is kind of one of those, because of the timing, it's hard not to listen to some of these lyrics as reflective of what your relationship has been with the Killers. And I wonder how real or fictional that perception might be.
Well, there is a percentage that's fiction and a percentage that's real, and I don't want to give away that percentage.
Fair.
But it's also about, you forgot to mention, it is about a lot of my past relationships with, you know, exes and so forth, mm-hmm. too. Mm-hmm. That's probably more about that than people think. People have been focused on the Killers part a lot, but my personal life is a little bit mysterious because I don't talk about it, but there's plenty of drama in it. Yeah. I promise you that.
I want to bring up one, and of course, obviously you have all the freedom to go into it or not, but you had mentioned like having to go through some form of shock therapy recently, and which that sounds...
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know which article I printed that or not. Yeah, it was a helpful thing called the Bean Protocol, where they kind of, I don't know how to explain it, they kind of shock the cobwebs out of you, and then you're like, can think a little more clearly. And I felt like I was more, he told me that some of his cases, the people had better grades after, or kids just behaved better or whatever. And I was more creative after. I don't know if that was like a placebo effect or if it was real, but I felt like I wrote a lot of stuff after that in a small amount of time. So maybe I'll have to do it again here in another 6 months. But I've been, ever since I dove into this project, I feel like I had a little more energy to do this. Like, I started with one, I was like, because it was a little intimidating at first, like, okay, here we go, making a whole solo album. I started with one idea, and that went really well, which made me want to go right into another one, and another one, and another one, and another one, and I still feel the same. Like, I still want to just keep working on my voice memos, because I'll probably never finish working on my voice memos and writing new stuff at the same time. I hope that shock therapy helped. I think it did.
I mean, is that why you seek it out, to kind of, you know, knock you into a creative state? Was that the reason?
No, I was just seeing a psychologist to see if I could make myself better. You know, I get distracted easily. I'm always thinking about things. I feel like I'm always thinking about something, or something is weighing on my mind, and I like wish I wasn't. So it's like hard for me to shake that.
Well, there's that line in High Places that I'll bring up right there. Today will be different, or at least I'll try.
Yeah, I guess that's sort of an optimistic line. So that's like, you gotta be optimistic every now and then. So that's, I like that line.
It's another great song, too. I mean, there's so many good songs in this. And hearing you talk about, you know, that you're going to continue, and you know, I've heard you mention that you're already writing for the next record in at least some way, in a way that you have been already. I mean, you just continue writing every day. I know that's sort of part of the job. What's the lessons learned? I mean, has anything been obvious already after having created this one that you're going to, aside from your song titles, that you're like, oh, okay, this is how we actually do it?
Yeah. Other than the song titles. Yeah. The song titles, I suppose I've learned a lot more about my voice, and I've also learned, I'm kind of torn. There's two different philosophies. One is just to do whatever it takes in the studio to sound good and not worry about what you do live. And then there's another one of like, well, how are you going to pull this off live and strip it back a little bit? So I'm kind of fighting with those two things right now, because there's some of my favorite guitar players on the record I'm not able to play because they're too tricky for me to sing at the same time, which is a bummer, because, you know, I want to be the one playing them, but I have to sing.
Yeah.
It's my voice. So I don't know. Like, I don't know if that's just something that I'm thinking about for the next record, like trying to figure out. You can change the melody slightly so that you can play it at the same time, but hopefully that's the better melody. Otherwise, you're like sacrificing what could have been better if you didn't worry about it anyway.
Yeah, no, I hear that from a lot of artists too. As a fan, and I'm going to project a little bit here. As a fan, I would want the artist to create the arts on the record, you know, to be as timeless and classic and amazing as it can be. Yeah, and then, you know, if the live show is different, I'm not bothered by that at all. You know, it's personally.
Yeah, I think I agree. I'll probably approach it that way. It's just the reality I'm in now. I'm on the road and I'm like, dang it, I can't play this. You know, like, so you're right though. I'll just figure it out.
Now, do you stick with just the solo stuff, or are you representing your past with the Killers in the live show? Do you ever pull out any of those or plan to?
I'm not playing any Killer stuff right now. It's a real debatable thing. I it would probably bother a lot of people, and rightfully so. The real danger is, because I'm tempted to play Killer song once and then say, hey, I'm just going to do this one time. So here it goes. And then they would expect it every time. You know what I mean? They'd be like, oh, you play that, and then be hollering it out. So it's like, it's a slippery slope is what it is.
Well, I mean, you have so many examples of artists who have had to go through this themselves. You know, their past versus their present versus their future, and how to live in whatever moment that you need to be living in. So, you know, it's,
yeah,
I've read that story a few times. I kind of, without having gone through it myself, I kind of understand a little bit of the ordeal to a certain degree.
Yeah.
I don't know. And
I will say it's tempting.
Yeah. I would love to hear it. If I came to your show, of course, you've been a part of those songs. Your songs have been a part of my life. And so many other people's lives, you know, as part of that band. So I don't know. I wouldn't be angry, I guess is what I'm saying.
You wouldn't be angry. I'm not going to say never. Mm-hmm. I just want people to come to my shows not expecting to hear them.
Yeah.
But who knows? But, anything is possible down the road. Yeah, we'll see.
That's cool. The thing that you created, you know, as the story goes, that you were the one who kind of put everything in motion and now, mm-hmm. you know, there's a press photo and you're not in it. And today there is a new single, and it's different. The thing that you started is still continuing without you. Is that weird?
It's a little weird. It's something I wrestle at in my mind. Like, I don't know quite how to feel about. It's a machine. And that's kind of what happened with the touring. You know, it's a machine that just couldn't stop. Mm-hmm. Like, once they want to tour, they want to tour for like a year and a half because they want to make money. And then they just have so many places to get to. And it's a whole, you know, thing of press in this area and crews getting paid, and they can't do 3 months, but they can do 2 years. So I was not willing to go a full, like, 2 years or a year and a half even. It was just a lot to swallow at once. And I've done that 4 other times where I did do the whole 2 year tour. Mm-hmm. So I know what it's like. It just grew and grew and grew into this, like I said, this big machine that can't be stopped. it's no easy decision, you know, to like get off this machine that's playing, you know, arenas and stadiums and all this other stuff. I'll be honest, I feel like I'm missing out at times, but I felt like I almost had no, I really felt like I had no choice. I was like, I can't do this whole tour. And it was like kind of an all or nothing ultimatum. So I was like, okay, well then I can't do it, I guess.
Yeah. It's a very interesting story. I guess that's what it is. You know, it's...
Yeah.
But, you know, if it's led to this music, and I don't want to, you know, to overshadow this, because Prismism is such a strong debut record. You know, for someone who's been doing it for 20 years and this would be your debut solo record, it's a hell of a debut, Dave. And I think you need major congratulations on that.
Thank you so much. It's been a long time coming. And now that I've started, I just enjoy making music, and can't wait to do more.
Yeah, it gets fun from here.
Yeah, I hope you're right.
It's been a pleasure talking to you. I really mean that. And thanks again for taking the time, and congrats on Prismism, man.
Thank you so much.
All right, we'll see you around.
All right, bye. See you.
Big old thanks to Dave Kooning. Again, the new Kooning record is Prismism. And hey, if you haven't already, please, please, please hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening from right now. Acast, Podchaser, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you're listening from, hit that subscribe button. You can then head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show every Monday through Thursday from noon to 3 Eastern, where you can also find some bonus episodes of this series over there. You can find me at Twitter at Kyle Meredith, Facebook.com/Kyle Meredith. Does it for this episode. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.